Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Monday, October 24th. We're back after a few days off. In fact, Tori is still away, but I'm joined by the beautiful Melissa Hill this morning, who is a friend and a host here on the station. Hi, Melissa.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining me. And for those of you who haven't had a chance to listen to Melissa, she has a weekly show Tuesdays. What's it called, Melissa?
Raw Talk with Melissa Hill.
Raw Talk with Melissa. Did we change the name of the show or what?
Well, you know, it bounces around depending on, you know, I could say Raw Talk with Howard, Raw Talk with Scotty, Raw Talk and
But
guests.
Wasn't it like Hill and Howard Raw Talk or something in the beginning?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's the way it still is on the website, so that's how I refer to it, you know.
Right.
But so what do you guys talk about? What's your show like?
Well, last week we spoke about the 27th anniversary of the Loma Prieta earthquake. And then we got into a little bit of Trump and Hillary stuff going on. Scotty is a Trump supporter, so that was very interesting.
And who's Scotty?
Scotty Schwartz. He alternates co-hosting gigs with Howard Levine, the original Howard of the Hill and Howard.
Right.
So tomorrow I'll have Howard back with
me.
And we are going to be, our guest is going to be Eric Palayu. He's the executive director of the Free Speech Coalition.
Oh, wow.
Coming in to talk about Proposition 60 and why it sucks.
And what's Proposition 60 and why do you care?
Proposition 60 is for California voters.
Uh-huh.
And it's called the Safer Sex and Adult Industry Initiative, I think. But it's not. That's not what it's about at all. It's more about California worker harassment. So he's coming in to talk about, we're going to go through the whole thing so that voters can get a better understanding of what it's really about as opposed to what the television tells them
right.
about.
So is that like the condom law or something like that?
That's what people know it as, but
right.
it's really not about condoms.
Okay, so that's probably not going to pass. Another thing that's probably not going to pass is the legalization of marijuana here, recreational marijuana, because the way the propositions are written suck.
Right.
So, yeah. I know you're warm. I apologize for it. I know I'm warm, too. But the air doesn't seem to be working this morning.
That's
so
okay.
We're going to have to...
Good thing I wore two shirts.
Yeah, exactly. I thought you took it off and you're only wearing your bra because I only see the straps from above my monitor.
Oh, right.
I'm like, she's feeling comfortable.
Yeah, not that comfortable.
We do have a guest in just a moment. We're going to bring him in. There's a lot to talk about and everything. And just a little bit about you, Melissa. Are you like from California? Were you born here?
I was, actually. I was born and raised in California.
Uh-huh. Where in California? Southern California here?
I was actually raised... I was born in Southern California, but I was raised in Northern California.
Oh, Northern California.
Yeah, so we hate L.A.
Yeah, yet like, you live here. Yeah.
I know. It was when I moved here, it was a temporary relocation, mm-hmm. and that was in 1997, so I'm still here.
Yeah. It is true, though. You know, I just went up to the Bay Area to visit my son over the weekend.
So
and
jealous.
He was telling me... how people in San Francisco don't like LA people.
That's true. I would say it's born into us, but since technically I wasn't born in Northern California, I can't really say that. It's just, I think it's a nature nurture thing.
Yeah.
So
are you feeling it in the headphones also? Okay, I'm just trying to adjust the
It's a 1 year.
Something's going on. I need to change the wire here. And the funny thing is all these problems come up in the morning when I start the show. So it's always my show that gets all the problems because these are like what I call the machine demons, you know. The demons in the machines, they come overnight and they screw up something every fucking time. You know, so it's always something, you know.
Well, when they're busy having parties in here on the weekend.
Exactly.
When you're not
I'm telling you, that's what I think's going on. Parties. Cool. And so I guess Halloween's coming up, what, next week?
Already? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Today's the 24th, right? So in exactly a week, it's going to be Halloween.
And then it's Christmas.
And then it's Christmas. Well, Thanksgiving, of course, has got to come before. But still, yeah, the holiday season's upon us.
Well, as soon as September hits, I'm already going, oh, my God, it's Christmas. Because just like one leads to the next. It might as well just be Christmas right now. The year's over. It sucks. And then it's my birthday. And then everything, blah.
Yeah. So are you prepared? Are you going to go dressed as anything?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You see, the thing is this. Halloween started as a kid's holiday, and I think it should stay that way, okay? I think adults in costumes, not a fan. Not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, once everything became slutty this, slutty that, it was like right? just no. It takes the fun out of it, I guess. Yeah. I was a slutty cotton candy one. Or actually spun sugar is what I went as. But that was like 20 years ago. I think that was my last Halloween. So
nice.
And where I live, people, the kids don't come up. It's too much walking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. So you lived here for how long now in L.A.?
Don't make me say the amount of years. I'll just say since 1997.
Okay.
Oh, my God. 19 years. Oh, my God. Oh. Yeah.
Well, but you are here, and there you go, and we love having you here. So there you go. It's your home now.
It is.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have a special guest in the studio who is actually like godsend because he came in earlier. Matt Polacek, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Of course. And we're going to have a great conversation and everything. I love Matt to death, so whenever he's here, it's a good surprise for me. Matt does a show with Alan Cardoza after this show today, Mondays at 11. Matt, what's the show called?
Answers for the Family.
And what do you guys talk about?
Basically, stuff that affects families in today's world. So whether it's you know, raising your children, issues with substance abuse, self-esteem, basically anything that affects today's modern family.
Oh, right. My gosh. I feel like this is like serendipitous or something. I had no idea.
Yeah, she doesn't even know who Matt is. She just popped in. But Matt is also, you're also with the Betty Ford Center.
Oh, my gosh.
And tell us about that a little bit.
Yes, so I'm the director out here in Los Angeles of the Betty Ford Center, an outpatient treatment center that obviously deals with substance abuse issues. Melissa's rolling her eyes.
No, I'm not rolling my eyes. My mind is blowing up right now. See, it's splattered all over the wall.
It's okay. We won't talk so much about
addiction.
Because we do all the time, but no.
This is actually really great.
Yeah. We've beaten it to death, I think.
Yeah. We have beat it to death, but yeah, because he's been on the show several times. But so we'll talk about other things, but I really want people who haven't listened before, including you, Melissa, when he was here, to know exactly a little bit about him. So tell us what it is that you do. I mean, you are at the Betty Ford Outpatient Center, and this is in L.A. Mm-hmm. So this is not the main one in Palm Springs, Palm Desert. And this is revolutionary, Melissa, because now they're taking any kind of insurance, mm-hmm. right, Matt? Tell us more about that.
I mean, basically, the idea was that, you know, the idea of treatment facilities is you go away for 30 days, mm-hmm. Which is wonderful, and they're very effective at what they do. But a lot of people, you know, don't have 30 days to leave their atmosphere and their life and their job. And so what we did is we had a high need over the last 20 years. People have always said, when in Los Angeles, can we get a good treatment program? There's a lot of these pop-up programs. There's a lot of these Malibu spa-type programs. But people that want, you know, true quality treatment had a hard time finding it in L.A. So what Hazleton and Betty Ford did is really bring treatment to the people. And we've developed really a groundbreaking treatment program that helps people integrate a recovery lifestyle into their real life, you know, activities. And it's really an incredible program. And, you know, obviously Ms. Ford started it groundbreakingly, 30 years ago or 40 years ago?
40 years ago.
And at the time, you know, for a powerful woman to come out and admit that she's got a substance abuse issue was unheard of.
It was a big deal, right?
She revolutionized it. She kind of destigmatized it.
Yeah.
And so what people realize now is that a lot of people, doctors, lawyers, celebrities, you know, addiction doesn't discriminate. And so we've got this idea of the drug addict on the street. But in reality, you know, the person on our left or right, it could be struggling with addiction issues and substance use issues. So we've developed a great program. We've been open for about a year and a half now, almost 2 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, and like you said.
So you're doing well.
We're doing well. And the ability to be able to use insurance now is huge. And
right, so, because they're reaching to everyone now. You know, it's not just the rich and privileged and so forth, only people that could afford it.
Yeah.
You're saying you can get the benefit of the probably what is the best rehab center in the country, and you can actually have access to it.
It's amazing, yeah. And we've,
you know. It is cool. So in simple words, if you're addicted, if your children are addicted, give it a, you know, give it a shot, and I'm sure you guys have a pretty high success rate if you're still around after so long.
Yeah, we have the benefit of having the Butler Research Center in Minnesota that working with us through Hazelton and Betty Ford. And we've got great outcomes. You know, it depends, different percentages for different drugs. And really, it's about the person and about where they're at with their treatment and their readiness to change. Because obviously, you don't get a magic pill to get in recovery. It's changing your life.
To recover from pills.
Yeah, exactly. The magic pill to recover from pills. But yeah, I mean, it's a lifestyle change, you know, and people that go through it are a lot happier, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you're enslaved by drugs, man, you can't possibly win in the long run.
No, and it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Please. Of course, that's why you're here.
do you give talks at other groups?
We do, yeah. I mean, personally, I actually next week I'm going to Houston to United Airlines, and I'm speaking for their employees on addiction in the brain. And we do a lot of outreach in the community. There's we have the Women's Symposium at UCLA where we get about myself and three or four other kind of leaders in the field and speak about women and addiction issues and substance abuse issues. And there's tons of great outreach that, you know, I'd connect you to.
Because I just started a support group.
Oh,
that meets on every other Thursday.
Well, I'm in.
And I'm poaching
Matt,
you.
No. That's what Matt does, you know, and he gives of himself as, you know, in service. And I really appreciate that in him, you know.
Right.
And he does, and he's really helpful, you know. You always have time for people, you know.
24/7. You can always call my cell phone. And I, you know, the be of service component of recovery to me is really the heart of it. And spreading the word, destigmatizing it. And getting, like you said, getting it available to everybody and the treatment out there to everybody. I'd love to help out in any way I can.
My co-host Howard, you know, when he came back, when the first thing that he said on the first show, not the first anniversary show, but the next one he came on, he said he, now that he's back, he wants to be of more service.
Really?
Yeah, because he belongs to Messengers of Recovery is a group that he belongs to.
Yeah, so. You see, I mean, stuff like that will make you humble, you know?
Right.
Right?
Like I said, serendipitous.
Yeah. There's good people out there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, there's a lot of good people out there, actually, you know? Not the people on the roads that drive. Those are not the nice people. But you also think these are like your friends and everything, you know. I mean, people just drive. And the reason I digress is because I drove to San Francisco back and forth. So that's a total of 12 hours of driving. Uh-huh. And you get to learn a lot about drivers and people and things like that. You know, you get to think a lot.
Right.
So I actually enjoyed it. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I was putting off driving those 6 hours for years.
Did you go the 5 or the 101?
I took the 5.
The boring cow.
The cow route, right. Yeah, that smell.
And that smell, right?
Right.
I thought I was going to die. There's thousands and thousands of cows.
When I was in high school, I met a boy who lived in Hanford. I was a cheerleader. Anyway, and we drove through there, and he's like, "That's the smell of money." And I'm like, "That's the smell of shit."
Maybe oil would be the smell of money.
And those cows are not happy.
No.
You know, happy cows. The commercials were the happy cows.
Oh, the happy cows. Right, the laughing cows.
Laughing cows, happy cows.
I read an interesting article discussing veganism, vegetarianism, and all that stuff, pescatarian. And the article was interesting because it was saying that people who just eat fish and chicken to support animals actually are doing more damage because they're the the point they were making is a cow you could literally eat for an entire year, right. Whereas if you eat fish and chicken, you're killing
many more,
thousands,
right?
And thousands of animals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that,
it's interesting.
That's interesting.
That's a good perspective on it.
But I look at, when you go through the grocery store and there's all that meat laying out, mm-hmm. there, and sometimes it goes bad, and I just feel like it's such a waste. Ugh. You know, I guess you see it from how much can I eat myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I can't store an entire cow in my freezer or refrigerator, and it's just awful.
Yeah,
it's a lot of waste.
Yeah.
Do either of you know what stores do with the food when they can't use it anymore? I mean, I know like at the last, like, usually the best time to shop, if you go to Ralph's, at least here, and I realize this, is like if you go like at 10, 11 o'clock in the evening, because then they have to get rid of all the salads and all the chicken of the day and all that stuff, so it's like half price.
Wow.
You know, but again, still, they probably don't sell everything. Do you think they give it to like needy people? I mean, where does it go?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Right? And nobody knows. And it's like we know where the hell babies come from, but we don't know where the food goes, right?
I don't know if it depends, you know, if it's by the chain, by grocery chain. You know, maybe they give them to the shelters or something?
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
I did read an article that went to the local buffet restaurants,
uh-huh.
and it picked up at the end of the day all the buffet foods and give them to the homeless people. And I can't remember the name of the company, but it's just a delivery service. And they went to, I guess, the hometown buffets.
There you go. No, that's how it should be, you know. And if somebody, you know, that's got a little bit of money or a little foundation or something where they can sponsor the delivery and the transportation of the food,
why not,
right?
That's a really great idea.
Yeah.
You know what, though? When I've been at things where people cater and you ask them, you know, there's leftover food and they go, nope, sorry, we have to throw it away. What's the difference between, why does catering people have to throw it away and then restaurants are allowed to give it to the homeless? Or
I don't know if they throw it away. That's the question. Well, I promise you I'm going to check into it, and next time I'll let you know more about it.
It's funny. We do a men's addiction meeting at Betty Ford for anyone interested in the field of addiction that's male. Uh-huh. And they cater the event. And so they bring food. And I always laugh because it's at our facility. And I always watch to see who of the men take the food home. You know, I'm wondering, do they leave it? Do they take it? And it's always the same guy who sneaks it out of there.
Really?
So he's got about 40 egg sandwiches he's taking home. I don't know where he's taking them.
Oh, my God. Some people are weird that way, right?
Well, I don't know. Well, guys,
what's the rule on that? You know,
I don't know. Guys that I know don't take home leftovers. I'm all about it.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Girls got to eat. If I can't afford dinner,
and a lot of people prefer leftovers. They think it tastes better. You know,
right? Yeah,
yeah. I like fresh too. Right out of the.
I mean, if it's salad, ew. You know, it usually gets brown. By
cold pizza though is good.
Mm.
Yeah, you see people like that. I can't if it sits for 5 minutes, I can't eat it anymore.
Wow.
I have to heat it. It's got to be piping hot. But I realized it's a family thing. Everybody in our family is like that, you know. So I guess my mom just got us used to eating something right as it comes out.
Huh.
You know.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Sometimes you burn your mouth, you know, but especially with soup.
That's true. My roommate is like that. He likes it scalding.
Scalding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tepid.
Yeah. It's funny how people are brought up and they think of different things. So this is cool. Should we talk about the elections a little bit? I mean, do you guys want to? I mean, I don't really want to get too much into politics.
What election are you referring to?
Yeah, exactly. Which one? Maybe we can talk about the peripheral stuff that happens.
Well, here's something I found out today.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman's going to be promoting gender equality.
Oh.
A cartoon character of a woman is going to be speaking out for gender equality. Is that odd?
But you know what? It's not the first thing. I mean, it's like a whole new comic series now where apparently the Joker and the Riddler are gay and things like that. You know, I mean, characters that were a white male now is a black female or something. I don't remember which characters those are, but some of them are, yeah. So they decided to really cross the lines and be really diverse. I wonder if they call it Diverse World of Marvel or something. You know, I don't know what the hell. But sometimes it just doesn't make sense. I think they go too far sometimes.
Well, I hope to see Batman or Superman coming out and saying, don't hit women.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, that kicker again. You know, the NFL is under a lot of scrutiny again this morning because there's a kicker for the Giants, you know, that domestically abused his wife multiple times.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just the thing that's fascinating to me is I remember when Ray Rice, we saw the video of him attacking his wife in that elevator.
Right.
And he still hasn't gotten a job. Not that he deserves, I'm not saying he deserves one. Yet this is a Caucasian kicker and he still hasn't even been kicked out or, you know, he was suspended one game.
Really?
So I'm sure it hasn't come up yet, but I'm sure that there will be some discussion on race and punishment soon to come, I would assume.
Maybe it has to do with, you know, a lot of people don't really know who the kicker is on the team.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Just saying.
Good point.
So Trump got a first major newspaper endorsement from the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Oh, Las Vegas. Well, because why? Is he going to open a casino there?
It's a pretty Republican state, from what I understand. Or at least Southern Nevada. I don't know.
Because Harry Reid had a lot of success there.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a red state for sure. So, but the amazing thing was that until now, not even one newspaper endorsed Trump, you know. So how can he possibly expect to win? I mean, do you think he's got any chance? Even whether you're for him or against him, you know. I mean, do you think he has a chance in this election? What do you think,
Melissa?
Do you think it's still a race, or because Hillary's campaign already started talking about the transition and everything, like as though they've won already?
I don't know. I just want to take a closer look at Gary
Johnson. Come on, that's not going to happen. Listen, not in this election anyway. You know.
Well, you know, I always vote for the alternative party.
Right.
So, yeah.
Because it doesn't matter anyway. Look.
It matters. Every vote matters.
No, I'll tell you what. No, but that's the thing. In California, it doesn't. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because we have the Electoral College, they don't count the popular vote. In other words, if someone wins, like the Democratic vote, so they get all the delegates. If the Republicans do, then they get all the delegates. But the thing is, Republicans never get all the delegates in California. California is a very Democratic state. So, for example, let's say I go and vote for Trump, right? And the Democrats win. They take everything. So since it's already given that California is going to give its votes to the Democrats, why even bother if you're not a Democrat?
Well, can we take a step back in time? What was it, 1992? Yeah.
With Al Gore? Or?
Right, yeah. What was that? Like, there was he won the popular vote, and then there was a discrepancy in the popular vote. And
right. It wasn't 92. It was 2002, wasn't it?
Oh, 2002.
And he did win the popular vote.
2000. Or something, yeah, but against Bush, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, they went to the popular vote, but how did they finally? I mean, Bush finally still won, right?
Well, it's the same thing that you were discussing. Bush won the Electoral College,
right?
And that's what decides the race,
exactly.
And so, even if you've got more votes, it doesn't matter. It's based on the Electoral College, which is what you were
Melissa,
yeah.
Sam. Sam was explaining.
Oh,
I knew you were.
You were looking at me.
No, I won't forget you.
It's okay,
you Sam, you know. No, but
her, him.
He was looking at you and saying Sam. That's true. But yeah, no, I mean, I think so. Some states are just like that. It's already predetermined. So, but I'm still going to go vote.
Because, and it could be on other issues that could be closer. You know,
exactly.
The proposition you were talking about could be closer. The marijuana law could be closer.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, how big is that book?
Sunday morning, I tried to start reading through, and even the rhetoric in there is difficult to read.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I can read on a pretty high level, and I was still struggling. And when I'm watching these commercials, I feel like I don't know what's truth, what's fiction. And if anything, this election's told me is there's just a lot of bullshit out there.
There is a lot of bullshit.
Well, last week on the show, my co-host Scotty was saying he had a friend of a friend of a friend. No, I'm kidding. But his really good friend who...
Kevin Bacon.
Yes. His really good friend like reads those booklets back front to back.
Wow.
And he said that every proposition in that booklet, none of them were for the people, mm-hmm. which is what government is supposed to be for the people. None of them were for the people. They're all they benefited were like 60 benefits to trial lawyers, and it benefits the proponent mm-hmm. who also brought to the ballot 61, which is the veterans prescription mm-hmm. thing, right? So anything that he brings to the ballot, I'm just going to automatically. It's bad. Like, I mean, you know, he's a billionaire who founded a AIDS Healthcare Foundation, mm-hmm. and he spent $4 million on bringing this proposition to the ballot. And our side is like, poor, no money.
Yeah, but both, you know? I know both of you guys are on one side of two of these propositions, but both of you are frustrated with the rhetoric of how they're written. Like, for instance, the marijuana one, the money goes to the wrong place.
Right, it's not going to school from what I understand, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I think the point that you just brought up is very important, that don't wait until you're at the poll and then you start reading all these propositions. You got to be prepared for
it.
Right,
exactly.
You got to know who's going to be there. So I guess even a glance, I haven't even done it yet, but just kind of going through the pages and seeing what you're going to expect at the polls, because it's not just the president. You know, there's a lot of things on the line.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and just the one proposition that I know of, it's 13 pages.
And what's because you mentioned it earlier. So the quote condom proposition, what's this battle? What's going on? Because I'm confused. I totally don't understand it.
Exactly. it's called the Safer Sex in Adult, I think.
In Adult Industry,
right?
Or something?
Safer Sex and Porn Initiative, something like that. Sorry, forgive me. And it's written as if it's saying, hey, don't you want your porn performers to be, you know, practice safe sex? And everyone's like, well, yeah, we want them to be safe. But what it really is, it's like it allows any citizen in the state of California to file a complaint against a worker. And if you look at it like that, like, for instance, so and anyone who is working on that set, makeup mm-hmm. artist, lighting guy,
boom.
Camera guy,
yeah.
boom operator, anybody, production manager, the person filling out the paperwork, all of those people will all be part of a lawsuit if it were to go that far. So basically, a viewer who's watching porn is going to be like, hey, they're not wearing a condom. I don't know. I don't see a condom. Mm-hmm. So, and I wish I brought the book.
Yeah, but that's pretty ridiculous how it's written, if that's...
And on the second page, the first paragraph of the second page in the pamphlet that mm-hmm. comes in the mail, it straight up says that... it says it doesn't have to be seen. However... it will be assumed that you're not wearing one.
If it's not seen.
If it's
right.
not seen, wow.
So basically, you're guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
And the defendant has to pay for all that, for the attorney fees and everything.
Really?
Whereas the proponent, which in this case will be Michael Weinstein, he will be using California state money to... basically
push this, yeah.
prosecute or mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it
yeah.
To defend his proposition. It's really...
What's the underlying... I mean, I don't... It's... This is not goodwill. This is not people who really are worried about people's, you know, medical condition.
Yeah, it's about control, I think. Right,
right, exactly.
Controlling other people.
Yeah, because he wrote himself into the... he writes... if it passes, he wrote it so that he gets a job.
Wow.
Like, he doesn't need a job. He'll become an employee of the state of California, and he won't be able to be removed unless both, like, the Democrats and the Republicans both agree to have him removed, and it'll be a long process. And again, but the big picture is that California state money, when California is already having a bad economy, right?
Right.
It's like, can they really afford? I mean, it's frivolous lawsuits. So the only people that benefit are him and trial lawyers.
Yeah.
Everybody else. And it's also, the public sees the outcry against it, and they see, oh, it's just a bunch of porn performers.
Right. They don't
My
care.
Privacy is going to be affected. Mm-hmm. But it's not just that.
Yeah.
It's, like I said, people that work behind the camera who support their families.
Well, yeah. The industry's already taken a huge hit, I know.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
And besides, I don't see that you guys, I don't see that the industry suffers from... epidemics or things like that.
Exactly.
Of social diseases. So I don't know what the problem is. And but the bottom line is most people don't want to watch porn with condoms, right? I mean, that's fantasy. You don't want to watch that.
I think there's been an actual scientific study to prove that either way.
Right. So it's a question of taste, personal taste or whatever.
I went out on the street, actually, and I asked questions and I recorded them on my phone, and I asked men and women, and they basically said that it would be distracting only because they're not used to it.
Right.
So if you're visually used to seeing it,
right,
then you know it wouldn't be, it won't be a problem.
But you just get it.
Yeah.
Well. So. Talking about intimate things, my God.
I know, it's too early in the morning.
Yeah, no, I don't mind that at all. This is the show to talk about it, but I'm just saying, for something like this to be on the ballot, you know, I mean...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has to picture a penis when we're doing
It's like, do I get to go vote on, you know, whether a construction worker wears a hard hat or a rope or a vest or anything like that?
And it's not like it threatens the general population in any way, you know?
It's fascinating.
Right? I mean, that people would want to be involved in this. But, you know, I mean, look, at the same time, Melissa, I think that people that get into the industry, I think their responsibility is to understand it's a one-way door. Once you're out there, you can't go back, right?
Exactly.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
That's correct.
Right.
Well, that's like social media, though, isn't it? I mean...
Right, especially
these days.
Once
you expose something out there, for sure.
I mean, when I was in, it was, you know, over 20 years ago, it was just about, did your mom and dad know? No. You know, my next door neighbors knew. Everybody knew. My parents, parents didn't know. They were busy doing other things, you know? They found out way later, but now it's like as soon as it's out there, it's on the internet, right? Everybody finds out.
For those of you just joining us, I'm joined by guest co-host Melissa Hill. She's the host of Hill and Howard Raw Talk, Tuesday nights right here on LA Talk Radio Channel 1. That's, of course, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Right.
Because it's the clock we go by, so you do the math.
And sometimes it's Hill and Scotty.
Sometimes it's Hill and Scotty, and we get a lot of cool things. You guys had Cameron Crowe here the other day.
Yes, we
Director did. Director Cameron Crowe, and it was amazing to have him here, and you guys had fun.
Yeah, it was our one-year anniversary show, and we extended the show and made it into a two-hour show, and we had so many people in this room. I basically invited anyone who'd been a guest over the past year.
Right.
And they all decided to show up at the exact same time.
Yeah.
So it was pretty, I felt like...
And note that I allowed her to do that.
And now you know why your wires aren't working.
Yeah, there you go, you know? Yeah, we try to limit the studio to 4 people, but sometimes they stuff 12 in here, and you're not the only one.
I tried to stagger them. I said, you know, some people come in at 8 o'clock, some people come at 7, and then everyone decided to show up at once, and you're sitting in the Cameron Crowe seat. So.
Wow. Yeah, there you go.
Look at me, almost famous.
Yeah. Almost, right?
Except I think we wiped that chair a few times since he's been here, so there you go. But, I wanted to bring up this thing. I mean, this headline, and I'm totally digressing from this thing, but... you know the migrant problems that Europe is having, and France is beginning to clean up what they call the jungle camp, and they have some 10,000 migrants. They're refugees, and France decided that's it. You know, we got to either integrate with France or we're sending them back home. So. And you know, but what strikes me is the pictures again. Why is it only men? Why is it only men? That's what I don't understand. If this is like refugees, aren't we expect to accommodate? Usually they say it's the women and children and you know. So
maybe they're in the tent.
They're inundated with this, and now they want to bring them all here, you know. So I don't know. I'm not for it. I'm not for it at all. I mean, I understand that America needs to... I think we have a certain amount of responsibility to help needy nations and people and so forth. But we have to take care of our own first, you know. I think our veterans are really shifted, you know, short... what's the word I'm looking for? Shortchanged.
It's right. an atrocity.
Right?
I just can't imagine, like, if my son, well, I don't have a son, but giving his life, you know, and donating his, you know, being on the front lines and coming home and having such a lack of opportunity waiting for him when he comes back.
Right.
It's disgusting. Or waiting 6 months to have a surgery on an ankle that you broke in Afghanistan. You know, I mean, wow. The stories... I agree with you, Sam. Yeah, I just don't get it.
There's so many veterans committing suicide. You know, it's like an average of, what, one a day to 20 a day. I don't know how many it was, but it's pretty scary stuff. And, you know, I mean, these people, military is another one-way door. You know, it's like you come back, you're not the same person anymore. Right. You'll never be the same person
after PTSD. What you see. Do you deal with a lot of PTSD?
We do. We have a lot of trauma, like a lot of patients who have trauma.
Trauma,
I mean,
right.
You know, it's funny. Yeah. I think about this as a child. I remember, like, I think I was 12 years old, and someone, a buddy of mine, like, held me down, and I couldn't get up. And just for that 1 minute, I felt that fear of right. not being able to control my atmosphere.
Right.
And this is in a, you know, a nice neighborhood and a nice house. To get to feel unsafe. So I can't imagine what certain women go through, what military people go through. But trauma is real, you know, yeah, and the effects of it are real on your on the brain and the body. And again, we're...
Was it the hypothalamus?
Yeah.
Or the hippo, something where...
Hippocampus?
Hippocampus,
yeah.
It's the recording device in your brain?
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. What we're looking at now is people who go to war, you have two systems in your nervous system. You have the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. So think of the parasympathetic as relaxed, like you just ran 2 miles or you just had sex or you're in that kind of mellow state. That's the parasympathetic, okay?
Okay.
So right now we're probably all pretty parasympathetic dominant in this room. The sympathetic is when your nervous system is activated. Your heart beats up, you're sweating, your muscles tightened, your senses are risen. And what they're doing now is they're looking at studies of people that are sympathetic dominant and parasympathetic.
Well, it sounds like
anxiety is right built in. Yeah.
Okay.
But when you're sympathetically dominant, meaning you're fight or flight, you know, you're in that dark alley and you're scared, you're more alert, you're better at fighting because your muscles are tight and you're
That's
you know.
True.
But your brain works different. And what they're learning is even memory is encoded differently. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you're in the battlefield and you're sympathetic dominant, so you're total, you know, your muscles are tightened, your pupils dilated, you're ready for war, your memory actually works differently. It doesn't work linearly. You remember chunks of memory.
Wow.
And so when you hear people come back from war and they say, I remember the smell of the shrapnel, because their senses were heightened during that time.
Right,
so
right.
Their memory actually is not encoding linearly. So when you talk about people who have been abused or in physical, you know, we're talking about the domestic violence thing, a woman being attacked by her husband, her memory of that event actually is not being encoded linearly. It's being encoded in chunks and differently.
And not necessarily like chronologically.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So
okay.
you're really messing with stuff here. And the other the other big issue is when you're sympathetically dominant, you don't it's kind of old brain, you know, it's like fight or flight, you know, you're just trying to survive. So you're kind of executive functioning. Your prefrontal cortex doesn't have as much activity in it, meaning you're not thinking critically. You're not making good rational decisions. So if you're someone who's been abused, someone who's gone through war, and someone who spends their whole life in that sympathetic space, their decision-making ability is going to be poor. Their ability to talk and handle their emotions and be able to read the emotions of other people is poor.
Wow.
And so it affects everything.
And you can see how difficult it is for them to integrate them, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you've had abuse
trauma.
Right.
Yeah. I had my upbringing, I had a very strict dad.
Right. So anytime whether I just put my hand on your hand, whether I enter a room and anything, once you trigger that sympathetic nervous system, you're now all of a sudden in that mode. And until you can breathe, you know, diamorphically breathe or get to a point where you're calm again, everything you do is going to be in that mode. And so you're going to, you know, your decision making is going to be more impulsive. Your thought process isn't going to be as good. You know, your total executive functioning is going to be down. So you're at a disadvantage. If you're in a fight, you're in an advantage, or if you're trying to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
But as far as you making good, smart decisions, anytime that triggers, you're at a disadvantage. And that applies to your entire life, from going to the market to making a decision on, you know, buying a home or not.
My therapist told me that I have a high tolerance for dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So like where most average normal people, I guess, who don't have that in their brain, they're like, whoa, that's wrong, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone like myself
flourish in it.
Yeah, I'll be
you
like,
stayed around.
Yeah, I stick around. I'm going to work this out. I'm going to work this out longer. So I've spent like years in situations where I was like, you know, when I finally got out, I was like, no, gosh, why did I stay in that so long? And another thing I've just come to realize is sometimes I think I'm fine, and then someone comes at me, even a guy, if I'm out on a date, and he comes in and he wants to give me a kiss or something, I'm like, I freak out because he's coming at me straight
on. Into your space.
Right, and it takes me a while to figure it out, what's happening, why is that, you know, and it'll be a few days later, and I'm just like, okay, maybe it's not the person. It's the situation. So how do I explain that to the person?
This is a shame, though, you know.
I mean, it must have affected your intimate life, the intimate part of your life, right? I mean, are you able to get close to people?
Well, I've never been married, and I've never been in a relationship longer than 2 years. So,
yeah, years is long, but
two years is long. But I mean, you know, there's other people that have been in much longer. But yeah, I mean. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to like...
No, it's fine.
You're
interesting.
Not.
No,
yeah, we want to know about you. That's why you're here, Melissa. Come on. And you're on the radio, and it's not... You can't apologize, because once you say it, a million people hear it.
Now
you know?
It's out
so
there.
There you go.
This is why I started the support group for people, veterans from the adult industry, who could just come to a room and just...
Share experiences
with everybody.
And that's a high, you know, talk about high trauma population. I don't want to generalize. But, you know, anytime you're younger in life making decisions and being put in situations where you don't have, this is your body and your physical control of your body. And anytime that's threatened is when we talk about this idea of trauma. And the worst thing that can happen is, you know, you have fight or flight, or the third option is freeze. And that's where, you know, if someone basically were to put a gun to my head in here and I couldn't fight or flight and I freeze, it's like an electrical short circuiting of your brain. And they've shown that, you know, to be true through these brain scans, where basically it's too overwhelming, it's too much stimulus coming in, and your body just shuts down.
Shuts down completely.
And that's the most difficult to treat.
I call it a syntax error.
Syntax error.
Right, and that's often that often happens probably with rape victims and stuff, right?
For
when
sure.
they say, "I was just not there," you know, I tried not to be present while this was happening.
Right.
Well, really quick, I just want to because I just want to make sure that we're not making the connection.
Oh no, not the industry. No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I shouldn't have. I was probably irresponsible.
No.
For those listening,
I just want them to know that that's not what we're talking about. But it's more about reintegrating back into society.
And that's got to be hard, because that's trying to come through that door that's largely a one-way door.
Right. I kind of describe it as you get dropped off at the bus station with a ticket to you don't know where and a suitcase. You're like, good luck if the bus is driving away. See you later.
Wild world.
Let us know what happens. You know, see you around. And you're just like, okay, where do I go now?
And the first, and the idea of feeling safe, you know, is the most important thing that we're kind of discussing in feeling comfortable and safe. And when that's at risk, you know, whether people have been had a history of stuff or coming back, you know, to not feel, even in the most serene settings, to feel at peace within, you know, having your 2 feet on the ground, it's very difficult, you know, to go through life like that. So
right. No, that's true. But I was going to ask you, Melissa, I mean, the thing is, you said I mean, you were referring that he was generalizing about porn stars and stuff, but he did qualify.
Oh, no. I was
no,
just,
but
for
I
the
wanted
people
to,
listening,
yeah.
I just didn't want them to
no,
to connect
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and right. you know, so we can talk about that, because, you know, people get into this industry, and what I'm trying to figure out is what goes through your mind. I mean, now that you find out it's hard to integrate back into quote-unquote civilian society, that's what you guys call us, do you still feel you would have done it the same over? You would have done over
in my era?
In
yes.
yours?
Yeah. If
no,
I,
not
I
in
wouldn't,
your era. Like right now.
Right now?
The way it's affecting your life now.
Oh, I'm happy with who I am right now. If
awesome.
It wasn't, if it wasn't for the adult industry, I wouldn't have this show. I wouldn't be here. Right
you
now,
don't know
talking.
That.
No,
you
I don't. I don't think
that.
So.
Why? What do you think you'd be? What would you have done if you didn't go into porn? Did you have any career Things you thought about before?
Well, I wanted to be a choreographer because I was a ballet teacher at the time. But I remember we were talking last Tuesday after the show. I did want to go into journalism or radio, but this was just a different way of getting there, you know. Whereas if I was just me, my person, then I'd probably have to go a different route. Whereas
you have a higher platform,
so. Right? In today's society, there's things like this radio station that exists that didn't exist back then. You know, it's just AM.
So you wanted to be known? Is that what?
No. I didn't want to be known. When I started the industry, it was more about expression.
I see.
Being able to try different things without, I always say, without my mom's face right there going, right. "What? This is wrong. This is wrong."
And you said you had a strict dad too?
I had a very strict upbringing. Yeah.
So I'm thinking that, but you can do, I don't know, you can experiment without doing it on camera for the rest of the world to see.
Right, well, there's a split in my brain for that. Like,
yeah, because I'm trying to figure out to make such a change in your life and your lifestyle, you have to be really compelled to do it. What compels a person so much to do it that they throw a lot of things out the window, you know, like maybe their civilian future?
Well, at the time, I didn't really see myself. I mean, I didn't. Neither one of my parents were college graduates. They didn't. Actually, neither one of them went to college. So I didn't know the process of how to get into college because they weren't able to teach me that. And, you know, all I knew is that I was going to do things my own way, because as soon as I was 18, you know, I was basically walking around with the middle finger to my dad.
Wow, pretty rebellious at that point.
You know, and I mean, it wasn't rebellious, but it was just like, I'll just be honest. Yeah, he was not a kind father.
Yeah.
So I turned 18 while I was still a senior in high school. So in January, so I spent 6 months being 18, and basically he started charging me rent instead of being physical towards, you know, physical punishments. He would charge me money to live there,
to try and control you in that
right,
way.
Right, exactly. Wow. Yeah. Wow. So getting into the adult industry was just a way of wanting to try new things without having to answer to anyone other than myself.
It's a completely different picture today, though.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
It's not comparing apples to apples. I mean, with social media and with, I mean, it's a whole different.
It's a whole different. It,
right, right. Yeah. Like when you ask me if I would not enter in today's industry, yeah. I wouldn't. But I'm glad I did when I did, because we shot on film, we were making movies, I had scripts, you know.
That's true. It was more like an art, right?
Yeah, it's exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. It was just the next level above R rating for me. That's what it was like.
Yeah.
So.
And I think about this, you know, I mean, we often think, oh, well, people will make jump into conclusions about porn stars and based on what they do on the screen. But what people forget is that they're actors. You know, they do what a director tells them to do. They just do it naked, you know.
Right.
But the bottom line is, these people are not what you see on film.
I would kind of almost say, I hope a military doesn't get upset, but I compare it almost like someone being a soldier. You're not a soldier all the time, but people expect you to be.
Right.
You know, so when they come back from serving their time and then they're supposed to reintegrate into society, how do they go back into being just, you know, Joe civilian when they're always like this, you know, ready to fight on edge?
But let me ask you this. When you get together with other people in the industry,
mm-hmm.
Or at least people that know that you were in porn and stuff, when you talk to them, what is the question?
Do we have regular conversations?
Yeah, exactly. Or do you ever talk about anything other than being in porn? Because that's what I've seen. It seems like among themselves and with other people, because other people are curious, so they ask the questions.
Kind of like what you're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
Yeah.
But you're the one that brought it up. I didn't even bring up you in the industry. You're the one that did. Right?
Yeah. No, it's okay. You know... Well, right now, it's an interesting time in the industry, and I'm involved with an interesting group of people. We are part of a union. For the first time in the United States, at least, there's a union for the adult industry.
That's very cool. And you're one of the founders, or the
I'm not one of the founders.
No, you're just a member.
I'm second vice president of Adult Performer Actors Guild. And so right now, myself and the other officers, we have Amber Lynn, Shawn Michaels, Alana Evans, Nikki Hunter, Ruby. There's like so many that we actually talk and argue about. We debate.
Yeah, debate.
We debate things about how we want to help the current industry, and how do we go about doing that? What are the things we want to offer? Because we want to make things, I don't want to say we want to make their lives better, because that's presumptuous and we're not God. But, you know, we want to offer them.
Ensure.
Right. We want to offer them other
some
things,
kind of support.
A place to go, mentorship. I know there's another group that does the same thing, I think APAC. They also, I think they do a one-on-one mentoring program. I think we're more want to give advice. Like I said, I'm really into wanting to help the veterans, the people from my era, and also try to help the current performers, let them know what it's going to be like when they leave.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And give them options. Because when I was working, when we were making movies, we learned so many different skills. I learned how to do continuity, script supervision.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Right.
That's awesome.
Right, yeah.
Folks, we're totally out of time, Melissa. I know you want to keep telling us about that.
No,
but
I'm,
let's quickly, because we got to vacate so Matt can do his own show.
Right.
So quickly, Matt, you were going to give your phone number out if people want to get a hold of you. I mean, how many people give out their phone number out? You want to reach out to Matt. Go ahead.
562-225-4093. And 24/7, I'm available to help out. So
awesome. If you need anything with addiction, folks, this is the guy I would go to, for sure. Melissa, how can people find you? How can they listen to you? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, as we know, Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio, we have Raw Talk. But you could also learn more about the support group at apagunion.org. And our phone number for that support group is 818-860-APAG.
There you go. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for
inviting me. You're a lot of fun, of course. Melissa is a lot of fun. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Enjoy yourself. Guys, stay tuned for Answers for the Family, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.